Channel 10, I'm here with David Vaskovich, the Chief Technology Officer of Microsoft Corporation. David, thanks for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Now, you've just given the opening keynote address at the 2008 Pro Photo Summit. The first question I'd like to ask you is, what is Microsoft's role and relationship to the professional photography industry? And to that end, why are we holding the summit?
Well, I'm famous for taking simple questions and giving complicated answers, and this is no exception. So I'm going to answer the question at three levels. First of all, even though the summit says Profo Summit, our real target is much broader than just professional photographers. So it really reaches to serious, what we call prosumers, people who don't make their living by taking pictures, who often don't sell their pictures, and who still have no hesitation to buy expensive cameras and have thousands of dollars worth of lenses. And you know, an important part of their year is taking vacations where the main goal is to take amazing pictures and so on. Mm-hmm. In fact, if you ask most professional photographers, a lot of them are envious of the doctors and dentists and car dealers and, you know, professionals who can do this just because they want to and who often spend more in their equipment than the professionals do. So for every one professional, there's at least 10, if not 50, of these prosumers. And the reach of our conference for sure is to them because they listen to the professionals. They get a lot of their advice from the professionals. That's who they respect and admire. And then beyond that, it's even to the consumers. There are a lot of serious consumers who, even though they have a point-and-shoot camera, who don't have multiple lenses, still take a lot of pride in the pictures they take, mm-hmm. consider it to be an incredibly important way to create memories, and who also want to learn about how computers and software and digital appliances make it possible to do a better job with pictures. Mm-hmm. So that's the core of the answer. The other piece of the answer, though, is deeper and even more interesting. So if you think back to the 80s, a lot of people won't remember the 80s, but that was really the beginning of the personal computer era. And one of the rather strange things about that point in time is that the first really successful personal computer application was something called VisiCalc. VisiCalc mm-hmm. was the first spreadsheet. And for a lot of people, when they saw VisiCalc running on an Apple II microcomputer, they weren't even called personal computers, they saw it. They didn't know what a spreadsheet was. A spreadsheet was something an accountant used. But when they saw it running, they knew they had to have it. And all through the 80s, spreadsheets turned out to be what we call the defining application for personal computers. It was 1, 2, 3 that really drove a lot of the progress, 1, 2, 3, the spreadsheet, in terms of personal computers. It was Excel, which was the first successful graphical spreadsheet that really put Microsoft on the map in terms of writing personal productivity tools. So that was the case all through the 80s. So then the question is, what is the iconic application in this decade? And I believed for a long time that it's photography. It's video as well, but it's specifically photography. And it's photography for two reasons. One reason is photography is something everybody does. Not everybody does word processing. Not everybody does spreadsheets. Certainly most people don't do programming. But truck drivers, waitresses, nurses, housewives, soccer moms, children, everybody does photography. Everybody takes pictures. Everybody uses cameras to create memories. So we're talking about a very, very ubiquitous application. But what's even more interesting is if you look for the single application that most stresses a computer, that wants the fastest processor, as many of those fast processors as you can get, the most amount of memory, the largest disks, the fastest graphics subsystem, you'll find there are basically two or three. Gaming is certainly one of them, mm-hmm. and if you look at what the most expensive computers are, they tend to be game machines. Programming is another one, and programmers end up having big computers. But interestingly enough, the third one would be photography. There aren't a lot more, and neither gaming nor programming comes close to stressing a computer as much as photography does. And what's even better about it is that unlike gaming and programming, it doesn't appeal to just a niche part of the population, it appeals to everybody. So when you put those two things together, you can see how having a conference like this and creating connections, emotional and other, with the professional photography community is a really good way to influence the computer industry as a whole.
That's great. So that really addresses the Channel 10 audience, which is an enthusiast audience, and digital photography is a very big part of that audience, as you just mentioned. So let's talk about perhaps the last, let's say, 5 years. What do you see as perhaps the biggest trend in the digital photography space? Is it very simply the proliferation of digital cameras in the hands of end users? Is it things like the cell phone camera? Is there maybe one thing that you would see as perhaps the most important trend we've seen in the past 5 years?
Well, true to form, I always think in threes.
Okay.
The first is the proliferation of digital cameras and digital images.
Okay.
Absolutely, that's number one. It dominates everything else, because until you have a lot of people taking digital images, everything else doesn't really happen. And so that's happening at three different levels. First of all, you find conventional point-and-shoot cameras have almost completely been replaced by digital cameras. Mm-hmm. You find at the high end more and more that the digital SLR, which is one of the fastest growing parts of the market on a percentage basis, is becoming more and more dominant. And cell cams are really amazing. They've replaced disposable cameras. And so now everybody has a camera with them all the time. That's the first big trend. The second big trend is that people are taking more pictures and they're doing a lot more with them. So this is a really interesting trend, because it used to be true that the average consumer took about 5,000 pictures in the course of his life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because you take pictures on film, film is expensive, you have to have the film processed. After you've taken the picture, you don't quite know what to do with it. Do you get one print or two prints? Where do you file the prints? If you ever want to make a big picture, you're really in trouble, because if you don't have a dark room, most people don't, you have to find the negative or the slide, then you have to pay somebody a lot of money, and then they don't do exactly what you want. And nowadays, all of that has changed. I can have thousands and thousands of pictures on my hard disk. The computer doesn't get any bigger. I can take them with me everywhere. I can share them. And what we're finding is that more and more people are becoming really excited about what previously was the realm of the digital, of the professional photographer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you find, like, a perfect example would be my cousin in New York. He's a Wall Street lawyer. He's in his 70s. And about 3 years ago, he bought his first digital SLR. Well, he now has 6 lenses and 2 digital SLRs. He works on his pictures all the time. In fact, for many years, Adobe's fastest growing segment for Photoshop was retired people.
Wow.
When I first heard this, I thought, this can't be right, retired people. And then I watched this very interesting video clip where they videotaped a grandfather, and he said, well, first of all, now that I'm retired, I have a lot of time in my hands.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I love the fact that Photoshop is complicated, because I can teach myself to do something my kids can't.
Yeah.
And he said, what I like best is that I'm working with what I treasure the most is my memories. And then when I'm done, I can show it to all of my friends. We get together and compare what kinds of interesting things we've done with the pictures. So that's the third big trend. Is the first trend is just that digital is taking over. The second is that people are taking way more pictures and doing more with them. And the third trend is that everybody is, in general, moving up a notch. You know, people start with a cell cam, and then they move to a point-and-shoot. They move from a point-and-shoot to one that has more zoom, and then after that, they move to something with interchangeable lenses. And you're going to see a vast broadening in terms of all segments of the photography industry.
That's great. And so now we've looked at the past, and we've talked about the summit that's happening today. Let's talk about the future, perhaps the next 5 to 10 years. What do you see as perhaps some of the trends that will roll out across the entire photography industry? I think some of the topics being mentioned this week are things like GPS, Wi-Fi and cameras, accelerometers, the ability for the camera to know where it is and automatically upload photos to a web service. Is that where you see the trends going in the next 5 to 10 years in this space?
So I would characterize it in terms of three trends. Ubiquity, which we're not there yet, but we're getting there.
Okay.
I would say the second trend is auto magic, and then the third trend is memories. So in terms of ubiquity, eventually we're going to get to the point where essentially everybody has cameras. And one of the really interesting things is, I think that's even going to be true in third world countries.
Mm-hmm.
When you go to countries with very, you know, very, very poor countries, you find that a lot of the people there don't have computers, and maybe never will. They're not people who are going to have a computer on their home or in their desk. They don't have a desk, and they often don't have much of a home. But increasingly, they all have cell phones, and increasingly, they have cell cams, and increasingly, there's a service that the phone company provides which allows them to store and share their pictures in the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the same applies, the lawyer who moves up to the digital SLR, the housewife who moves to a more advanced point-and-shoot camera, and the person in Mali who has no real money at all but still takes and shares pictures with other people on his cell cam. So that's all ubiquity. The second thing is that the cameras and the software that processes the pictures is just going to get smarter and smarter. Mm-hmm. So a perfect example of this is the fact that many modern cameras will detect faces. And, you know, one of the classical problems for an amateur photographer is you're taking a picture of a person and there's a lot of backlighting. And so that you don't see the person's face, it turns out completely black. Except in these newer cameras where you'll see the little rectangle identifies and recognizes the face, doesn't know who the face is, but knows enough to correct the exposure so that the face is always in focus. That, with image stabilization and autofocus and just a whole bunch of other features like that, are all what I call auto magic. The camera magically does what I want it to do, and I get the right picture without having to think about it. But the most important part is what pictures are about. Pictures are not about pictures. Pictures are about memories. Mm-hmm. So the two stories that I like to tell about this, the first is the story of my mother being in Berlin in the late 30s and standing outside her grandparents' house, which was burning. And she chose, knowing what she was doing, to run into that house, knowing that it might be the last thing she did in her life. She did that to rescue photographs, because she knew that if she didn't rescue those photographs, those memories in a more complete form would be gone forever. So the pictures that we take are incredibly important, not as pictures, but as memories that in many cases are completely irreplaceable. And in the same way, if I ask somebody, you know, you have an audience of enthusiasts, if I was to ask any one of those enthusiasts, how much memory do you have? Mm-hmm. They would all tell me something about the memory in their computer, how many megabytes, maybe it's gigabytes, and they would be in the left half of their brain thinking and reasoning. If I then ask the same person, man, woman, old, young, what's your oldest memory? I'm not going to get an answer about a computer. Their face is going to change. Usually it's going to soften. And if they're willing to share the memory, I'm going to hear about their parents, I'm going to hear about their childhood, I'm going to hear about an early pet, I'm going to hear about something that comes from the heart. And so what's really going to happen is that we're going to make the transition, which was never really possible with film, to we're no longer taking pictures, we're creating memories, and then we have ways to automatically organize and share them. And today, if I wanted to find the best picture of my daughter when she was 3 years old, I'm not sure I could, because I have too many pictures, and right. They're not automatically organized, and the computer doesn't really help me in that process. But in the future, the computer will become more like our brain. Our brain helps us find old memories. Our brain helps us organize memories and links them to the emotional content, and computers and software will do the same.
David Vaskovich, thanks for your time.
My pleasure. Absolutely.